The New York Times app has all this stuff that you may not have seen.
The way the tabs are at the top with all of the different sections.
I can immediately navigate to something that matches what I'm feeling.
I go to games always.
Doing the mini, doing the Wordle.
I loved how much content it exposed me to, things that I never would have thought to turn to a news app for.
This app is essential.
The New York Times app. All of the times, all in one place. Download it now at nytimes.com/app.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast. You're more than just a kiki of weekly cultural review. I'm John Caramonica, a critic at the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
I'm Pusha T. I'm one half of the Clips.
And I'm Malice, one half of Clips.
You are now listening to the real. And that would be Clips.
Top down. Spinning, you see the ball spinning, I'm loving
the Clips are here, Pusha T and Malice. We're going to talk about their very deep catalog, their work with Pharrell.
Dude, like Snoop say, step your game up, double deck a boat, Mediterranean.
Pusha's solo work with Kanye.
Yeah, it's prime time, my top back, this pimp game.
Their new album that's coming out very soon, Let God Sort Them Out.
You was Fuji Lala. How was Alibaba?
This is their reunion album after almost 15 years. So we're going to talk about what it's like to reunite with your brother on record, the public fracas that Pusha T sometimes finds himself in, and how that informs his art. And we're going to talk about what it's like to buy your independence back from a record label to save your soul.
Thank you for being here, guys.
Now, here we are. We are more than 20 years into the Clips adventure, and I do at least want to call out one thing, which is in 2006, cover of Mass Appeal magazine. It's the first time I interviewed you guys. This is in the sort of intermediate period between the We Got It For Cheap mixtape series and Hell Hath No Fury,
right
in the middle of that. And I wonder, one of the things when I went back and revisited the transcript from that conversation, one thing that I was struck by is that both of y'all had what I would say would be a healthy skepticism about the systems that you were putting records out into, and almost like a doubt, like, look, maybe this is going to work. Maybe it's not going to work. Maybe we'll sign a label deal. Maybe we won't. These mixtapes. Malice, you even said you were resistant to doing mixtapes that time because you're like, why would I? I don't do mixtapes. I do albums. Yeah, I do albums. Yeah, like, yeah, I don't do mixtapes. I wonder if you think about the kind of unsteadiness of that moment almost 20 years ago, and now here we are. I wonder if you can identify moments that really felt like it tipped the scale back in your favor. Because I think you were like the most touted underdogs at that moment.
Specifically, a moment during that time was the Knitting Factory show.
Oh, yeah.
We were just talking about that.
We were talking about this yesterday.
Like, so the Knitting Factory show was, well, first of all, let me just tell you where my mind was.
Yeah.
During that time and just kind of how ignorant I was, you know, to everything that was happening.
Sure.
So at this time, you know, of course, Clips comes out, Lord willing, we, you know, 2002.
Patty cake, patty cake, I'm the baker's man. I bake them cakes as fast as I can.
4 years later, we're into Hell Hath No Fury and the mixtape series before that.
Yep.
How I knew mixtapes at that time, it was a bootlegger who would sit in front of Norfolk State University.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You could get any Clue tape you wanted. You can get whoever was hot.
Shout out Cliff.
Yeah, shout out Cliff.
Shout out Cliff.
Cliff been waiting 20 years for this shout out.
Yeah.
That was so, your mixtape guy.
Yeah, Cliff was the mixtape guy, man. And, you know, if you wanted anything hot, you know, if you wanted the mixtape, you would go down to Norfolk State. He would be bootlegging it in front of 7-Eleven or whatever that area, you know, whatever was.
Brambleton
area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it got to a point where Clue was threatening Cliff on the mixtapes. So that's what I knew the mixtape was and where to find all the greatest locks, freestyles, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, of course.
Boom. We Got It For Cheap series comes out. This thing called the internet happens.
Yep.
And, man, I couldn't find the mixtape in the street. It was on the computer.
Yeah.
And man, I was enraged.
Because you were used to a hand-to-hand underground.
That's all I knew. That's all I thought. That was like, yo, we ain't out here in the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guys that, you know, I'm dealing with, we're dealing with at the time, they're not downloading anything.
They're not a LimeWire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. LimeWire. So during this time, I was infuriated, man. I was like, I remember cursing out Clinton Sparks. Mm-hmm. I remember cursing out a promoter, the promoter at the time, who was, because I was even complaining about, even after catching some flame through the mixtape circuit,
mm-hmm.
with the We Got It For Cheap series, the people who were gravitating toward the mixtape circuit was like white, college,
mm-hmm.
you know,
hipster kids.
Clipster. Y'all remember Clipster?
Oh my God. Clipster. Clipsters. So you know who you are.
Yeah. And
and we appreciate you.
Yeah, we love you. So at the you know, and we were like, damn, but then still I'm angry because it's not what I know or what I resonated with in regard to where, you know, where I thought the energy was.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what was happening, it was changing right in front of our eyes.
And you guys, I think, were really the first to truly benefit from that transition of the online conversation, the 1.0 blog era, download sites, mixtape sites, et cetera. And I think it also opened up the eyes of a lot of people in the music business about, oh, it's not just one path that a record can take.
Right.
Because
right.
prior to that, your first album, even before that, to Executive
Exclusive Audio.
Right. If you go back to that, there's one path for that. It's like we're getting a song on the radio, we're getting a song on BET, and that's the road.
And you had that with Grindin' and whatever. Yeah, you went the straight path.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it was
the shake
how do
up.
We reinvent?
Right.
Then when you start to see it in the flesh. So let's talk about
the Knitting Factor show, because that was a wild night.
The Knitting Factory show just, you know, in hindsight, for me, it just makes me think of everything we were taking for granted. I didn't know that there were kids who were going to show up in bait jackets and pointing at jeans and pointing at the shoe. And I didn't know that they were that. It was that type of fan out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you had no way to see them.
No way.
Right.
No way.
Didn't even know they existed.
Didn't even know couldn't be in a room with them. Didn't know what rooms they were in.
That's right. When we got on stage, I was like, wait a minute. It's a sea of kids in this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Not only were they just word for word with the mixtape bars, they were like, oh, he has on the General jacket from da da da. He got on the O2 such and such as in the, you know, and I was like, oh shit, this is like, you know, we're just getting this shit free at home. Mm-hmm. Like, send a package.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we just want to wear it. And nobody around us had it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, I didn't know that...
kids were keeping up like that.
I didn't know they were keeping up like that. And that's when I realized, like, oh, there's a whole nother thing to tap in.
Yeah.
And you weren't alienated by your clientele being white college kids, because, you know, we had RZA here recently, and mm-hmm. he said when they went on the Wu-Tang tour with Rage Against the Machine mm-hmm. in the 90s, different guys in Wu-Tang reacted differently to going out and seeing white faces basically.
Yep.
Like, oh, this isn't what we thought we were doing. This isn't who we thought we were talking to.
Yep.
But it sounds like you guys saw it as a moment of opportunity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, thinking back, we were actually the first rap group to perform at South by Southwest. So, you know, just to see, to discover a fan base that we did not even know that we had.
Yeah.
And we had to play to it. That's who was coming out,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was electrifying. It was a great energy, you know what I'm saying, to see it. And we never lost the streets. You know, the streets were always still right there. But the people that were coming out and going crazy, I mean, Stark Raven Mad was the Clipsters. I was a little disgruntled at the time because we were in the throes of, like, you know, all of the label drama. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So when you come to me talking about doing a mixtape, you know, I wasn't with it at all. Mm-hmm. You know, I like mixtape. Now I'm not doing that. So it was serendipitous to find that, to keep working and then to discover, you know, just from constantly working. And that says a lot for, I think, anybody that's going through any kind of industry or label drama, just to keep it going. You know what I'm saying? Don't stop, keep creating. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like we're saying now, a whole new world had opened up for us behind that.
It was a real, like, water finds its level moment, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah,
it was,
yeah.
It was really it like, itself, yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
It was very striking. And I think certainly myself as a writer, even you in college, I think at that time, you could smell the change in the air.
Yeah.
You saw it online. You saw it IRL. And then you talk about going to South by Southwest. Yeah. I would imagine 1 or 2 years later, one third of South by Southwest was probably rap music.
Yeah, right,
and that's all internet assisted by that point.
For sure. And, you know, just the whole festival circuit, like actual, you know, performing at festivals.
Pitchfork Festival, stuff like
it was
that.
Like,
Pitchfork, before Rolling Loud.
Yeah, exactly.
Before Rolling Loud.
It was all new to us.
And so then you guys have this period of acclaim and shine, and Hell Hath No Fury finally comes out, a huge critical smash, a commercial hit as well.
Tomorrow ain't promised, so we live for the moment.
I know, yeah, you too. Okay, we get it, yeah, you too. I know, yeah, you too.
You ride the Clips wave for 5-ish years at that point, right? Is that?
Three.
Only three. So
six,
that's,
six
I mean,
to nine.
Even that's crazy to remember, right? So Till the Casket Drops comes out in 2009, and obviously, there's a lot that happens in between, but we haven't heard a Clips album again until now. Talk to me about first splitting up. When was the conversation, Malice, with your brother to say, hey, I need to take a break from rap?
So, you know, we were actually in California and we had met with Rick Rubin. And
the pilgrimage.
The Malibu
pilgrimage. Yep.
No phone, no shoes. So, you know, we were talking and I can recall listening to my brother and Rick Rubin talk about, you know, things that we should do, you know, things, you know, just how everything was going for us. And I'm thinking, you know, they can talk all they want. I'm about to leave, but I had to entertain the conversation.
But you knew.
Yeah, I knew in my heart. Like, I knew, like, you know, that I wasn't gonna continue. And it was that very night after we left Rick Rubin, had a great conversation, and we get back to the hotel and we're in the elevator, and I told my brother, you know, I'm not gonna be able to continue doing this. And around that time, we were entertaining thoughts of doing separate solos at that time.
Sure.
And, you know, I just told my brother, I said, you know, I think it's about time, you know, since you're already entertaining it, you should just go ahead and do your solo. And,
you'll step back.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I had like things on my mind, and I knew it was like time to, you know, take a step back.
How surprised were you? Because one thing, having interacted with you on and off over the years, you seem to have a very, very close brotherhood, like a true close brotherhood.
Right.
How often is it that Malice says something that actually surprises you and catches you off guard? And how caught off guard were you in that moment?
No, I mean, I don't think I was caught off guard at all. I think that I knew what he was feeling the whole time.
How would you describe what it was he was feeling?
Oh, he was, man, he felt cheated. He felt cheated. You know, in every sense.
Mm-hmm.
By the business.
Yeah, by the business, for sure. We were cheated.
Mm-hmm.
We were cheated. You know, with that being the case, it was a fight that we didn't really need to be fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, brought a very unfair and uneasy feeling with Malice in particular. At that time, you know, I feel like I was just like, man, we just gotta keep peddling.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Just to
keep the name out there.
Just to keep the name out there, you know what I'm saying? But you know, I knew it. Like, I knew it. I knew exactly how he felt. But that's just how we are, I think, as brothers too. I don't think we're connected in a way that we don't have to say much.
The show go on now.
The show goes on, but
the show
artistically,
always go on.
But artistically, I always just felt like we were so much better.
Yeah.
You know, my mindset was just like, oh, you know, we couldn't we couldn't stop, or I definitely couldn't stop knowing like how much, you know, real estate we had like left on the table, you know? So I wanted, you know, there was never a point where I wanted to stop.
And Malice, you know, I think people who have paid close attention, they know you spent some time following religion, and your father is a deacon in the church. You guys grew up around the church, like you, and you spent some of that time off when you're not rapping, pursuing your spirituality. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it is.
And how much of the decision to step away from hip hop then was like a moral one to you? Were those things connected? Did you feel like you were putting bad energy into the world? You know, did you feel like there was something unholy about what you were doing as the Clips?
For me, myself, yeah, definitely. Like, I had become, if you ask me, quite friendly with the world, you know.
Mm-hmm. Too friendly.
Absolutely, yeah. Quite friendly with the world. And I can also say that my thing was always to go out, do what we had to do, and then come back home.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Then it got to a point where on the day scheduled off, it was always something coming up, mm-hmm. a new check. And then you got your boys with you. You got your road managers, mm-hmm. and everybody's trying to make money. So, you know, you take them into consideration as well. I had to be able to live with myself at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? And you know, look at myself in the mirror. So it wasn't lining up with who I truly was.
But then here we are all these years later.
Yeah.
Is there some separation in your mind that you can better make between Gene the man and Malice the character?
I can tell you right now, I don't have no attachment.
Mm-hmm.
No attachment to nothing. I enjoy being with my brother. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the music that we make.
Right.
You know, this is the rap I love.
Right.
The rap that we do, the creativity that we do, this is what I enjoy.
One thing that was on my mind, because I want to get obviously to Let God Sort Him Out and kind of the specifics of this record. But as I was listening to this record, you know, we were talking in the elevator. I'm like, I know these raps. Like, I know it's like bone deep at this point. Like, I understand the structure, the patterns, you know, it's like you've lived with them for so long because I've been listening to you for so many years. I wonder, you guys as formalists, as technicians, as constructors of rhymes, constructors of 16s.
Yes.
When you look at younger generations that don't make rap like that, are there people who still stand out to you as technical innovators, even if they don't do the thing that you guys do?
Man, I'm what I see and what I respect, first and foremost, is how the newer generation really gets it out the mud.
Mm-hmm.
They get out the mud. They bring together their fan base in a way that is very rabid.
Yeah.
Very rabid.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you just sit back and just culturally look at like just certain events, if you look at the, you mentioned Rolling Loud.
You played Rolling Loud.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Rolling Loud. You mentioned Complex Cons.
Yeah, sure.
Or things. You get to see how rabid the fan base today,
yeah,
of these kids are.
Mm-hmm.
So you appreciate it more on an entrepreneurial level than on a musical or technical level.
Well, yeah, definitely on a more entrepreneurial level. But I look at guys and I can tell who lives it and who believes it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know, like, regardless if it's not what I do,
right?
You know what I'm saying?
So that's what you're looking for, more than a technical approach.
Yeah, more than
it's an emotional approach or a philosophical approach.
Yeah, you were early on Chief Keef, for instance.
Exactly.
Like, you brought Keef to to the Good Music fold, and you said, this kid knows what's going on.
All of them.
Right.
Pay homage or K's vomit, ungrateful niggas I don't like.
And that was because of the energy and because of the authenticity,
exactly.
Not necessarily because of the rap.
Yeah, 1,000%.
It's always been about that.
They made me
though.
Believe it.
Yeah.
I saw the video and I'm like, oh, I believe all of this.
A pop bitch, that shit I don't like. Nah, I got a bad bitch, yeah, that bitch right.
don't know him from a can of paint.
Right.
But whatever they did in that video, I was like, I believe it. You know, I look at the King Carsons and the whole Opium Collective.
Yeah, sure.
Destroy Lonely and Cardi. I look at what they do, and I'm like, damn, like, you really got them round up. You rounded everybody up, and they're here.
Yeah.
They're here for it. I respect it. I don't want to do it. Right. You know, it's what they do.
Post,
you know
what I'm saying?
I can't.
Pusha T show.
And in my mind,
we do mosh, though.
Kids can mosh anything these days.
It's real, like that collective in particular, and that's, to me, very post-structure, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you guys are building the house, and their whole thing is like, what if we take the bottom brick out and watch the thing fall?
Yeah.
And it still sounds good. It's just a different approach to the thing.
Yeah. I mean, listen, even Future. Future doesn't 16 like I 16.
Yeah.
Now, I know Future word for word. So, you know, would that be the case?
But you think of someone like Future still as an MC, even though he's in the booth sort of working it out as he goes, and you might be...
Yeah, but nah, Future definitely is a... He constructs it differently, but... That's real.
Yeah.
That's a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was a real thing. I mean, I remember I had writers DMing me on why I put Future on Pain on my album in 2012. I guess probably one of the first, you know, lyric driven rappers who
looked out and
was
embraced.
Like, yo, I want him.
Right.
I mean, I dare not say his name, but man, you know, every time, you know, he says something great about Future today, I just DM him like, hey, bro. You remember? I ain't gonna tell it, but you know. You know? And, you know, even with what he does, it's just very, very, very real thing. It's just different vibes.
But you don't lament the fact that this style is not at the center of the genre.
And we're talking about what we're talking about is an age gap, right? A generation gap.
Yeah.
And when you
call me old?
Look, none of us are young anymore. We'll put it that way.
Right.
You guys in your 40s?
Yeah. 50.
50 even?
Almost 52.
There. 52.
Almost
right.
There.
Yeah.
Almost there. 49.
Yeah. 48.
One thing, when I was going through the old transcript, you guys referred to Hell Hath No Fury as, before it came out, as an emotional drug record, which I thought was a great term. But one thing that I've always felt with both of you guys on Clips albums and also individually is you're hinting at internal struggle, but you're not necessarily putting it right out there. And on this album, the new album, right in the first song, you're leading with that. And I wonder if you can talk about the decision behind, I mean, I know you lost both your parents in relatively quick succession a couple of years ago. I'm very sorry about that.
Thank you.
Leaning into the choice to not only rap about it, but also lead with it.
I think the idea to lead with it on the album, to lead with the record Birds Don't Sing, came from the process of creating the record. I think the process was unbearably hard.
Yeah.
So much so that, like, we were like, man, this is the hardest record. Like, you know, we got hard records on the album, but no, the mentality of this and just the depth of this and the process of it was so hard that it, like, I knew that this was going to touch people. And I felt like we should get that. We should pull them in with that.
Trying to navigate life without my compass. Some experience death and feel numbness, but not me. I felt it all and couldn't function.
The safe thing to do is you make that the final track.
Make
right?
That that's the final track, man. Right?
The song about our parents, that's the final track.
No.
Not here.
It was too important. Too important. Too important for so many reasons. It was just something that couldn't be ignored as far as tackling the subject matter.
If you guys were going to get in the booth, it was the thing that was right in front of you.
For sure.
Also reuniting as brothers, coming together as a family again, and as what remains of your core familial unit with your parents gone, like to reintroduce yourselves that way, did that feel important to honor your parents and how they raised you? Did that feel like the right way to reintroduce yourselves as a unit?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, my dad and my parents, the way that they parented us, I think that's a narrative that needs to be spoken about. You know what I'm saying?
You want to center that.
I think people need to hear it, you know, especially in our community. And it's okay if you didn't come up with both of your parents, but you can change it if you want to, you know, if you have kids. And I think it's very important, like, it's very important that we be there for, you know, for our kids. It's funny because I've always seen my brother, like, he really never played about that. You know what I'm saying? If you weren't taking care of your kids, you can't come hang out with us in the club. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to see you nowhere around me. If you're not doing nothing for your kids, like, what kind of friend can you be to me?
This is going all the way back.
This is before you had a child of your own.
Before kids, before he had a son. Like, we just knew that kind of etiquette. That's how we looked at it. You know what I'm saying? But it's cool. Like, you know, you can, if you can't help how you come up, but you can make changes.
Are you also a parent as well?
Or? I am. I'm a parent. I'm a grandparent. Yeah, I'm a grandparent. It's crazy. Yeah, yeah, but I am.
Is there an intersection with that? Joe was asking about morality and kind of your decision to step back and kind of the narratives that get put out, you know, on these records. How has parenting, or just the act of knowing that you're responsible for these lives in the world, how has that changed your thinking about whether it's creativity or the message of the songs?
It's made me conscious of, I've always been conscious of the things that I say, the things that I put out into the world. Said a lot, and a lot of things I knew better then, but the fact that I did it, I still talked about it. I hear from the listeners and fans and people who appreciate our music, or even if you don't appreciate our music, how I've always painted both sides of the picture. I recall on a record and on the verse was, I heard them pay for their fix. I seen them pay for their fix when their kids couldn't eat. Well, that was a real line. That's something I really saw, you know, with a mother that I dealt with, and her kids were hungry. And she told him that she didn't have any money, but I know what you just did with your money, you know, and I seen it. And I talked about that, and I talked about how, you know, those kind of things made me feel. It's just reality and just painting it from, you know, from my perspective.
I think that's how I've always seen your music, is like, I think of the Clips characters as conscientious villains, almost, you know, like,
I think that'd be like fair to say
bad guys with hearts is sort of the image that you two have put out. And it is like, there's something about being as brash as you've wanted your music to be, but then cutting it, emotional drug music, you know, as John said, you've always balanced that. But the other thing is that you want to live by a code. And even if you're a villain, you have to have a code, you know, like, and I think that's something that you're like, I'm going to do
honor amongst thieves. Right.
When I'm doing right, I'm going to do it a certain way. And when I'm going to, when I might be doing wrong, I'm still going to do it a certain way.
Yeah. That's what you tell yourself to help you feel good about it. You know, that's what you do.
Yeah.
We're all compensating in our own ways.
Yeah, does that ring true to you, Push? Cause I feel like you know, you've done a little less maybe of the
stepping back.
Yeah, the stepping back, but you also have that balance in your lyrics.
I think because the way I was raised, and particularly from my dad, I've always looked at music as more creativity and entertainment, and never thought about it, thought or cared about what I put out there.
Like the ethics of it.
Yeah, the ethics of it. Because that was not an excuse I got to lean on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at I home. Didn't get to lean on excuses like that at home. Like, you know, the music didn't make me do it.
Yeah.
You know, like the music didn't make me do it.
I can say anything in the music.
Yeah, like I could say anything in music. Yeah, and what I'm saying is, like, there were no excuses like that that got to...
You were stupid.
You were stupid, exactly. My father would come... It's my dad's birthday today.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy heavenly birthday.
Yeah. Yep. So we could sit down and like, man, I'll never forget. He took us to the movies to watch. It was Chucky or... No, it might have been Freddy. And, you know, of course... We come back home. He's scaring me because of Freddy, and I'm younger. I'm scared. I'm crying or whatever. And my dad is like, he does not understand. You know, I'm the fool. I'm the youngest one and everything. Yeah. No, even at a young age, you better have some like,
yeah,
you know, some foolishness. None of that. Yeah, you better have some common sense. You know, that was a damn movie.
Right.
It's not real.
Yeah.
I think, you know, with that being said, like, you know, I remember playing NWA in the car and, you know, and, you know, him listening to it and being like, you know, like, whether he liked it or he didn't, it was there. And he was like, okay, you know.
He was open to the
idea.
He was
just open to the idea of, you know, what it was. Now, he would have his opinion about it. But like I said, the way I was raised, I wasn't able to lean on excuses. So I never felt like I had to watch what I said musically or what I put out.
I mean, he didn't. But meanwhile, all of his friends end up in jail.
All of them.
So, you know, if for him, great, you know, but for everyone else, not so much.
Right. Yeah. Living your raps can come with risk if you don't know how to navigate properly. It sounds like you have a healthy understanding of perspective of what's the difference between entertainment and reality, but not everybody does.
Right.
Listeners or performers.
Just, I feel like with the whole, you know, parental thing, it's like, man, I cared about them so much too. Like, even in a sense of like never disappointing them. I was raised to not disappoint them too.
I wanted to ask how are you guys, like, as parents? How are your households? Are you strict households? Man. Like,
I'm a terrible parent.
Say more.
No, man. I mean, I reward for bad behavior.
Yeah. You're a soft parent.
I am soft, man. I am 1,000% soft.
You're the pushover.
I am totally the pushover.
Is that a reaction, you think, to how you were raised?
Nah, man. My dad was cool as hell. Mm-hmm. Like, man, I'm here today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my wife and my son are home. Like, they're in Virginia.
Hello to
them. When I come home, I can't look at my son and get into reprimanding him about hardly. I mean, it better be crazy.
Right. Wait, I'm curious, Malice. What about you?
I pretty much raised my children. They're grown now.
Yeah.
My wife and I got compliments all the time of how well behaved, you know, and mannerable our kids are and were. Disciplinarian, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to the good, you know, my kids had an awesome childhood. They love how they came up, you know what I'm saying, and how things are. So, yeah.
I really see the big brother, little brother dynamic here. I've never been in the same room with you two like this.
I have pictures at my house, you know, of me and my brother. And in most of the pictures, I am looking like I'm just very pensive and he's smiling, like, when we're together, you know. And that's something that I noticed just going through pictures. And I think that comes across the exact same way in our music.
Let's take a quick break. Our interview with the Clips will be right back. In the meantime, here is Song of the Week. This is John Caramonica on Cat's Eyes Gnarly. You can check out the full video at Popcast on social media.
You ready to get gnarly? Get in. Let's talk about it. Gnarly is this fascinating, chaotic song that kind of car crashes together all these different musical themes and approaches.
Oh my God, this song's so lit. Congratulations.
It's all skronks and screeches and piled on top of each other as if they're all kind of getting crammed into an industrial shredder.
It's fucking gnarly.
Gnarly.
Don't talk to me.
And then there's the lyrics, which is really just a bunch of nouns and catchphrases thrown together.
Like, gnarly.
Tesla.
Everything is gnarly. Car videos, gnarly. Chrome ring, gnarly. Arjun, gnarly. So this is a really wild, chaotic, unpredictable song, and it opens up a lot of questions. What is K-pop right now? What kind of artists qualify as K-pop? Cat's Eye is a girl group that was formed on a reality show, Popstar Academy, by HYBE, the Korean conglomerate behind BTS and many others. The twist with Cat's Eye is it's global. It's got members from the United States, the Philippines, Switzerland, and also South Korea. The music video is very, very technicolor and absurd. Really makes me think a lot of Crayon, which is an incredibly important K-pop record by G-Dragon. Crayon was an annihilating song that dwarfed pretty much everything that came before it in K-pop.
Why so serious?
If you go back and watch that video, you see K-pop molting and remaking itself in real time. I'm also hearing a lot of MIA in this, the Piracy Funds Terrorism mixtape and RLR. What you want, Bucky Dangan? What you want, that fire dangan? You also can't hear this and not think about hyperpop. You think about 100 Gex and the kind of everything in the dumpster type of approach to making pop. So K-pop feels like it's at a bit of a crossroads right now. What you're seeing is a genre that for years was open-eared and absorbing influences from all around the world to create something new. It's now become a formal style itself. K-pop maximalism is exportable around the world. So these kind of distinctions that we've been preoccupied with for the last decade, those are all gonna go away. Is gnarly K-pop? Yeah, but it's just pop. Everything's gnarly.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for the New York Times. I grew up in Texas, on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that people don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray, and that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, and that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at the New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to the New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
I think both sides of the Clips dichotomy that we've been talking about come in rapid succession on this new album, Like God Sort 'Em Out. You open with Birds Don't Sing,
right,
about your parents, and then all of a sudden it goes into Chains and Whips with Kendrick Lamar, which is the complete flip side. Was that whiplash intentional?
Yes. Yes, man. Yes. Because in creating the album, we just wanted to show that everything, and you know, it was hard, and like, this is, mind you, this is order after order, like, and I'm like, nah, man, just every record meant so much, mm-hmm. and had, you know, so many different meanings, and just deep, and people were drawn to, you know, just certain things and verses and so on and so forth. We just wanted to show that, you know, we can punch you this way and we can punch you that way. Mm-hmm. You're getting different colors, but they all hurt in a certain way.
And that record, Chains and Whips, specifically been done for, or not done, but has been mm-hmm. in the hopper for a long time.
Yeah.
In 2023,
yeah.
When I was with you in Paris with yep. Pharrell, that was something that I remember P played me. It yeah. was like, this is, you know, that was maybe the first time I even knew that there was going to yep. be an actual Clips reunion
yep.
as opposed to a rumored Clips reunion, you know.
Yeah,
right. And debuts then at his opening Louis Vuitton
right,
show.
Right, yeah, that's right.
Years ago at this point.
Right. So yeah. Pre-Kendrick, though.
Yeah. There was no Kendrick verse in the yeah. in the
or
runway show.
Yeah.
It's been 2 years since then. There's been some conversation already about this song being a holdup
yeah.
For the release of this album.
For sure.
Talk to me about what a lyrics committee does at a major label as far as your understanding and your experience.
Yo.
What is a lyrics committee
so,
for our listeners?
Listen, and this is what I, like, this is how
I understood it initially. The lyrics committee, from what I understand, was supposed to, you know, take your music, make sure there aren't any interpolations,
secret samples.
It's a copyright check.
Basically, that's what it's supposed to be. Since 2018, it was for me, at Def Jam, a way to censor my music or a way to make sure I wasn't having any subliminal disses or anything in anything that I did.
Yeah.
That's how it was used for me.
And your first experience with that was in the middle of your back and forth with Drake with Story of Adidon.
A baby's involved, it's deeper than rap. We talking character, let me keep with the facts. You are hiding a child, let that boy come home. Deadbeat motherfucker.
How did that conversation go? And then how does that lead into what happened with Chains and Whips?
After Adidon, or whatever, there were quite a few records that were stopped, we're not doing this, or was, you know, just basically shelved. And it
your
was
verses,
yeah,
for instance,
verses
on the Pop Smoke album. Yeah,
Pop Smoke. But the telling part was when they would get the lyrics wrong.
Oh, sure.
So it one day I forget what song this was, but there was a Pop Smoke song that definitely was that had bars in it.
By you.
But then there was another that didn't, and they thought it did. And I was like, wait a minute, what is going on here? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you're interpreting something totally wrong.
Like two different songs.
Right.
Both with lyrics by you, yes. But one with a message and the other without a message.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's when I knew, like, wait a minute. I was like, Steven, is this shit... Are you serious right now?
Mm-hmm. To your manager.
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry.
We know Steven Victor. But
so I'm like, wait a minute. Listeners. You know, this is something that's... This is a thing at this point.
In your mind, they were being overly sensitive about you rapping about another artist signed to that label. Drake, a huge artist under the Universal banner. And they were sort of playing referee. He was getting Shea Gilgeous Alexander calls, is what you're saying.
For sure. For sure.
And then at that point, you said, all right, I'll keep it moving. You put out Story of Adidon on SoundCloud instead of commercially. The Pop Smoke verse
happened,
gets removed.
The verses get removed. A couple verses get removed. I move on.
Right.
I just move on musically.
Right.
You know?
So then fast forward to 2024.
Fast forward, yeah.
Drake and Kendrick do their thing.
Boom.
Drake files a lawsuit.
Boom.
You play them your new song with a Kendrick verse on it.
Boom.
How do they react?
Now, mind you, the energy up to that point is everybody's clamoring, oh, new album's coming, so on and so
excitement.
Forth. Excitement, everybody's ready. Listen, we 10 songs, 11 songs, 12 songs away. I mean, you know, close. We show up with the Kendrick verse and everything's halted. It's halted. It's said that it will not be put out. They just didn't want to put it out. They would not speak via email.
The label
would not send emails.
Nothing in writing.
Nothing in writing to my management. They would call my management, you know, 10 times in a row trying to get all of this, you know, trying to, you know, just plead their case. Mm-hmm. Now, there was nothing even to be, you know, they didn't like the optic, in my opinion, they didn't like the optics.
Two Drake foes teaming up.
Right.
Yeah.
Did there a line they pinpointed? You know, censor?
They pinpointed a line where the phrase Trump card was used.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So stupid. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like the phrase Trump card was used, and they said that they didn't want any problem with Trump or something like that as well.
Unrelated to
unrelated. Totally even unrelated. Yeah, totally unrelated.
Just a Trump. Yeah. So you felt like they were looking for something.
Of course. They were looking for
to halt the optics.
1,000%. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion.
And how did you guys take that? They said either censor this verse, take him off, or what?
Well, we ignored it because it was so crazy to us. We're like, nah, this can't be real. Like, this can't be real. So we ignored it. And then one day, I believe it was Steve Gawley made the call.
A lawyer
at UMG. And was like, hey,
look, I'm not stupid, guys. You guys aren't stupid. You guys aren't, you know, changing anything. We'll drop the clips. Pusha has to stay. And
as a solo artist.
Yeah, we'll just have to move on. But that doesn't work.
Sure. Right?
That doesn't work. You know, ultimately, we're like, yo, what's the way to do the business? Like, how can we, you know, buy ourselves off of this label?
Right. And Stephen Victor, your manager, gave an interview with Billboard. He said there was essentially a 7-figure payment to free you guys from your contract.
Yeah.
They're going to take a little bit of profit off this new album.
Yep.
So here we are 20 years later, and you're still in the thick of
drama.
It with label drama.
Yeah.
Like, was that dispiriting to you when you're like, all right, I'm back. I'm ready. I feel good. I'm centered. Listen, and yet here I am.
I want to know this answer because I never asked.
I'm too old for this shit.
Not even. Because like I said, I'm not attached. If it go down, great. If it doesn't, it still don't. But like, I worried about that. I could vomit every time I have to hear about somebody else's name in our interviews, that we can't just get back to the music and to deliver what it is we're trying to do. All the red tape, all the politics, I don't like nothing about it. But I'm cool because I've seen it before. I didn't expect much to change. The only thing I'm elated about is, like I said, to make the kind of music that we make, and you know, just to be arm in arm with my brother while we out here doing, you know, the things that we have to do. But I don't like any of that.
Push, I'm curious how you feel about that, because you have 20 years worth of music under your belt.
Yeah.
Classics to many people, you know. And yet there are still people who only know your name in association with the names of other artists, whether it's Kanye and Pharrell, people you've had fruitful creative partnerships with over the years, or Drake, who you had less fruitful, we could call it a fruitful creative dialogue, some might say. But you're also a businessman, and you're savvy about the way you sell your product and promote your career. Like, do you have that push and pull where you think like, man, am I just never going to do an interview without these names being said? Like, does that keep you up at night?
Nah, it doesn't keep me up at night at all, man. Because I just feel like it's the game. And when you're in the game, this is what comes with it. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's a Clips fan, a Pusha T fan, you know, if you follow me, you know, like, this is all real shit. This is all very real. This is happening in real time. You get my life in real time, usually. If I say it's drama, it's drama. Mm-hmm. If I say it's drama, if I say that it happened, it really happened. I don't have it in me to lie. I don't have it. Mm-hmm. I don't care enough to lie. And as a matter of, like, listen, we paid for it. So it's my story.
Right.
Right. Why, you know, wouldn't it be?
Listen, had I not paid for it, you might not get the story.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
But you made me pay for it. So now this is the truth. And you have it. And mind you, while all of this is happening, I never complained out loud once about it.
Mm-hmm.
I never complained how the deck be stacked against me. I don't complain about verses and songs that don't come out and whatever. I never complained.
And I think people have taken advantage of the fact that you don't complain and that you don't snitch and you don't talk. And people know that you're not going to say nothing.
That's what they live off that. They know I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
They know that. They know I'm not going to do it.
They play it, you know, they play it like a card because they know, you know, that's not what you do. And, you know, and the reason we have to go on like this, however the game is played, like Pusha just said, we are going to play it that way. I'm just saying that it's unfortunate, you know, that it has to go that way. When I think about things like censorship in hip hop, rap is like the arts, entertainment. It's like the last frontier for Black expression.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we have. And for any kind of censorship, it's egregious.
Mm-hmm.
It's to even think that could even happen. You know what I'm saying? And you're out here, you're on the road. It's sometimes it's dangerous. Like my brother, he's on the road. Some missing furs, your child's furs, this furs, that, or whatever, and do all of that to be censored. Like, this is how I saw the game the first time.
The first time.
This is it. These kind of things is what I saw the first time, and it's how I look at it now. Right now, it's just, you know, it's just different now.
And you've purged, and like you say, you essentially bought back your right to speak your story.
Right.
That's it. There are some frisky bars on, at least on So Be It at the end. There's mm-hmm. some frisky bars here.
As it should be.
You want to talk about the frisky bars?
Of course. Whatever.
Talk to me what that, where's TMZ? Is TMZ on the speed dial? What are we doing here?
Then we wait for TMZ to leak it. It ain't no secret, so be it, so be it.
Smoke. You know, that was just my perspective. Like the third verse was my perspective. It all came from actually being in Paris.
So be it, so be it.
This is culture in the Smoke.
Travis Scott, he came through carrying the Utopia briefcase.
Right. Yep.
You know, doing his whole promotional spiel for his album.
Yep.
He comes, he interrupts the session the next day. The verse, the meltdown verse, mm-hmm. or whatever comes on.
I melt down a change that I bought from your boss. Give a fuck about all of that heritage shit.
Drake on Travis Scott talking about melting Pharrell's jewelry
and all of that. And I'm just like, man, you know, that was a corny, like, you shouldn't have been here anyway.
If you knew what, you had
what you knew.
No, you didn't have to be here anyway.
Yeah.
But I don't, him specifically too, I don't take it as personal as I should. It's Travis. He's harmless. Like, I'm not into what his whole makeup. I took it there.
Her Utopia had moved right up the street and her lip gloss was popping. She ain't need you to eat.
I took it there and you know.
Because you felt like he was playing both sides.
Yeah, you know, just playing both sides. And that's corny to me. And I've done a lot to get away from that.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? I'm working on a Clips album. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm working on a Clips album. I'm in with my brother. And P, that's our circle.
That's the unit.
That's our unit. I'm out of that mix. I've been out of that mix. He, you know, I know where he gets it from.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. I'm cool. I'm done. And then to, like, you know, to come back in our fold, you know, to come to
make a point of.
Yeah, to invade the fold and then, you know, do all that he did was like, man, that was corny. That was corny.
Needless.
But I will say again, he's shameless. He does it. You've seen him do it to everybody,
including seemingly to Drake himself, right?
Like he's done it to him. He's done it to Ye. He's done it. He got to pull it off in this capacity in the Clips, and it's fine. You know, it's just what he does. I just could not speak to it.
Sure,
I've definitely had to put my hand on your shoulder before. You died in front of me. You cried in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Calabasas took your bitch and your pride in front of me. Like I had to tell you, I had to help you. You know, I did. And it's like, you know, people take that type of shit for granted. I don't take that for granted. I don't. And I don't, you know, but it's fine. Like, you know, like I said, I'm not even.
You just put it in the music. So
yeah, man.
You're in this air clearing
so
mode.
So be it. So be it.
Right.
The idea. Mm-hmm. So be it. So be it. But you need to understand what I think about you. You just need to understand mm-hmm. what I think about you.
On the first single for this album, Ace Trumpets, you allude to that situation with Kanye, and you say, you know, some of you guys are still waiting on him, and essentially, I'm done
mm-hmm.
being a part of this. What you guys have termed a mess and
sure.
and mm-hmm. waiting my turn, etc. Like, when you think back on the years that you spent in the fold with Kanye West and Good Music and running that, helping run that business, obviously you guys made a lot of great work.
Yes.
Probably had some great times.
Yes.
Saw the world.
Yes.
Do you regret moments where you might have held your tongue?
No. No. It was because it was only me. It was only me. So, no.
So you considered it a job. You're like, I'm here.
Yeah. Only you that could have seen it that way? Or?
No, it was only me that, I mean, I don't even know if I ever held my tongue. I always right. spoke to everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I spoke to it. And when I spoke to it, whether you, what you do with that information or what you do,
right.
In taking advice or perspective from me, that's what you do. But I mean, no, I don't regret any of it.
I mean, you know, we made great music. It was a great time.
Did you stay too long?
No. I think that's the problem. Mm. I think the problem is I've always had motion. I've always had things to do. Mm. I'm not a person who has to sit up under.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
when, kept yourself busy,
right? I mean, you know, I put out albums. I put out great albums. Mm. I would say that I put out some of the best music of the fold.
Mm.
You know, that to me, along with the fact of just me being me, you know, allows me to be, you know, have my perspective, and I speak it.
Is there any heartbreak associated with the fact that the center of that did not hold, and then you had to part ways?
It's no heartbreak because he is not a person that we ain't the same. We can't outside of music, we're nothing.
You and Kanye.
Yeah, we can't be anything outside of music. Like, you know, music is where we click.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, his principles, his morals, his mindset, we don't see eye to eye hardly ever.
Sure.
Ever. And we never have. I've said it a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
We don't.
I saw you smiling, Malice, a little bit.
Because I just seen him out there. You know what I'm saying? I know what's going on with him. I watch him. I watch him close. I watch him like my mom would watch him, and to know what's going on. And, you know, my brother just comes from just loyalty to a fault. You know, if you're my friend, you're my friend. You know what I'm saying? And I just seen him in the mix of people who I don't think reciprocated. I'm talking about, you know, through his career. You know what I'm saying? It's like, to me, he just looked like a lone wolf out there. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, still holding up his principles and his ethics and you know, standing on business the way he stands on.
Were you wanting to call him back and say you don't have to be the lone wolf?
Like, it's good to be the lone wolf sometimes.
It's good to be the lone wolf sometimes.
Yeah, it is.
Everybody knows.
Yeah, it's no sympathy. They can see it. Yeah. That's how you move out here in this world. You know what I'm saying? If you're a man, that's how you move.
If you're a man.
If you're a man.
Only if you're a man, though. Because if you ain't a man,
you in trouble.
You can't move like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you got to flip flop and kiss ass and do all the, you know, backbiting and you know.
Reality TV is mud wrestling, begging. A wise man once said.
Yes, it is. Of course it is. Of course it is. Kidding me?
Now that you guys are back. You guys,
come on.
Pharrell, you made a lot of this album. In his office, essentially, at Louis Vuitton in Paris. Yeah.
Looking out over the plaza.
You guys are back together.
The Seine River.
Yeah. Speaking of Seine, Wi-Fi?
Wi-Fi.
Is that for the, you call it Wi-Fi for the rhyme? Or
Wi-Fi, I was going to Paris. It's Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi.
Is that what they call it?
Wi-Fi. Yes.
International flights connect me to the Wi-Fi. The only way you reach me.
What do you mean?
Okay.
Air France.
That was a side note. They call it the Wi-Fi on Air France?
Air France. Man, I haven't flown to Paris
since they've had Wi-Fi.
Oh,
you know?
Come on.
Okay. Very funny. But you guys getting back with Pharrell, and yet him and Chad not making music as the Neptunes.
Right.
Is there a little bit of something missing that, like, you two are together, Pharrell and Chad are not, like, and the moment when you were ready, like, do you miss Chad? Have you spoken to him?
Yeah.
Like, what's the status?
Absolutely miss Chad. As far as, you know, being on the album, you know what I'm saying? But I'll see Chad in the airport, in the street, you know what I'm saying? At Buffalo Wild Wings, you know?
The VA.
Yeah, VA, you know what I'm saying? But, what, you know, whatever they got going on, you know what I'm saying? Just hope for the best for that or whatever. But that doesn't, we're all still, you know, we see each other. It's always going to be love. Always.
Yeah. Did you feel like that was missing in the music at all?
For me, no. I mean, you know,
No, I mean, everybody knows my favorite album is Hell Hath No Fury.
Yep.
Pharrell did that alone. That's it.
Pharrell's your guy. That's your...
No, Chad's my guy. I love Chad.
Sure.
I mean, Pharrell's my guy.
Yes.
Love Chad, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, we're brothers. We came up together. But, you know, when you say missing in the music, there is no missing in the music when it comes to the clips. And if it's just P, it don't matter. We're going to find. We find what we find. And I've, just because you use that term, I'm like, I'm going to take you back to where I'm telling you is my favorite ever.
Right.
And I'm telling you he did it alone.
Right, right.
So that's that.
Can you talk about what you guys bring out of Pharrell?
Oh, man.
Because that to me, like when I hear the beats on this record, if you go back to 02, you know, you go back to those kind of like spare, minimal, hard, organized chaos beats, right? That frankly, not a lot of other people sound good on, you know, there's so much space in them.
Just
that
you and Timberlake.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially you and Timberlake together.
Ma, what you want to do? I'm in front of you. Grab a friend, see, I can have fun with two. Or me and you put on a stage show. And them all kids ask how to chain glow.
But they're almost like hard to rap on because there's so much palette to paint on. When I hear the production, there's so much of that kind of like the wall is tumbling down upon us.
Yeah.
I wonder what it is about y'all that puts Pharrell in that direction. And I wonder what it is about those beats that allow you to be expressive in the way that you are.
I think that the clips wants a certain thing and a certain sound. And I tend to believe that we are looking for things that P specifically was a fan of at one point, you know, that we all were fans of. We don't search for sounds. We search for feeling. That's how we make music. We're looking for the feeling.
Restore if the feeling.
We're like,
take me back.
What did you feel like when you heard Who Shot You? Oh, okay. That can do that. Oh, that fits there. What did the Benjamins feel like? I've never, you know, and it's funny because Pharrell is such a future person that you can't use certain words with him in a studio setting because it ruins the mood.
He doesn't want to look backwards.
He don't want to look backwards.
Oh, interesting.
He don't want to look backwards.
So you have to trick him into it?
Yeah, you got
to
trick him. You got to trick him into it. And if you don't, y'all may just, you know, stay spinning your wheels.
You mean certain words like old song titles, or you mean certain words like nostalgia?
Don't, please. Oh my God. Never say nostalgia.
Okay.
Just check. Never say, never bring up
anybody in the room with P.
Don't say, walk out of the room.
Never bring up an old song trying to get your point across. One for one. Like, you know, if you're speaking about the feeling of or something like that, you got to talk in all type of fucking codes. It's fucking,
big adjectives.
It's fucking painstaking.
Artists, you know?
You fucking understand me, my man. Like, you have to, though.
That's why we have all the big adjectives. Right. We got to keep
geniuses are annoying,
oh,
right?
Oh, my God. But, yeah, man, like, it don't work like that. Like, I think what we've mastered is trying to, is searching for a feeling.
Yeah.
Versus a sound, versus a drum, versus anything. It's always the feeling first. And, when we know that that's what we're trying to reach. Now, I can pull references all day. Like, we can pull references of like, man, that shit was hot, or, you know, you want something dark, like, ah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. You can pull that, but like his search is it's always for the feeling and how to turn it futuristically upside down on its head. So, you know, it's it can get a bit tedious, but I feel like when we get in our groove, like right now, I'm a bit annoyed because we've been separate for a minute. Like, you know, album done, we're on promo, we're doing
right.
You know, we're doing shit. who knows what he's doing right
yes.
now. Who knows?
Designing a hem for exactly. a pant.
Yeah. Before we get to a snack, give us a moment. Set a scene for us. Tell us a story about recording at the Louis Vuitton office in Paris. Like, what was the most, like, you look around and you're like, I can't believe all this stuff is going on at once. Like, was there, when you think back on recording this album, is there a time in that space that you'll remember?
I will say everybody, while we recorded Birds Don't Sing, it was, everybody in the office, sewing, drawing, sketching, crying. Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the whole, you know, because the whole song is a conversation. So it's like, you know, just having the conversation and having it out loud and, you know, not being able to finish.
So you're not like behind some
200-pound
door.
Room, I mean, the room that was sort of has the window that faces out onto the plaza. You did it in there.
In there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that has the doors that can close. Yes. But once you open the doors.
Right.
You're right there in the office.
You're in.
Yes.
You see the sewing machine.
The sketch people, the shoe people.
That long table with the round couch.
They moved the pool table out. For, you know, mm-hmm. for more room, you know, it's a full workspace. That was a time where it was just a vulnerable recording session. And I'm talking about everybody felt it. And just in a sense of we couldn't finish and just trying to put it together. Was tough. I mean, you know, you got to remember we're all, of course, we're brothers, but you know, when you get into the Pharrell of it too, we're all 30
years deep.
Yeah. 40 years.
I don't know.
I don't even know no more. Yeah. I say 30 cause it sounds right. good. No, sure. It's like,
it might be.
We're all
the number's too big
yeah.
to wrap your
we're
mind around.
35 year friends. We're all, mom and dad, you know, speak to, converse with, check on
family.
Yeah, really family. A thing. So it was a tough, tough few sessions.
Yeah.
And then he's, you know, he's kind of crazy too. So he's like, he thrives on, feeling and emotion. So he's just like, man, no, don't let it out the room.
More.
And so, you
lean
know,
in, press
yeah,
the bruise.
Yeah, press the, yo, put salt in the wound. Mm. Right now, he's going to pour it.
How much of that was written before those sessions started and how much of it was written?
This is all in real time. Yeah.
All in the room.
This is in real time. So he's going to pour the salt because he don't get out of mad scientist mode, you know, even in the mix of it.
Malice, what about you? Any days other than that are going to stick in your memory about your time in Paris?
I guess just being there, so much going on, you know, the runway.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell am I doing on a runway?
The runway.
You know what I'm saying?
As a grandfather.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it didn't make any sense to me. But, once again, it's just part of the wonderment that we've always experienced, you know, being with Pharrell and throughout this whole creative process and just over the years, we always found ourselves in some kind of scenario that we just can't believe that we're here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's still going on. It's still going on to this day. It's still going on to this day. And to record and, you know, and the Louis headquarters is just—it's just insane.
Just a reminder that elegant art comes from all kinds of circumstances.
That's right.
All different
That's
places.
That's right.
Yep.
And you know, just the whole bucket list of like rap and watching rap be in
every
all
space,
these spaces,
you could
like you know what
imagine.
I'm saying, and like yeah. and really just taking it to the, you know, just trying to take it to higher and higher heights, man. It's how I want to see it, man.
Right.
That's how I want to see the music, man. It's how I want to see hip hop culture, rap, whatever you want to call it, man. This is how I want to see it.
Unfathomable 25 years ago, probably, but yeah.
Oh, man, I definitely wasn't thinking this shit 25 years ago. I mean, no,
No, I ain't even gonna lie. I mean, I can't even lie to you.
Yeah, of course.
Your imagination didn't go that
high.
Yeah,
it didn't. It did not.
You gotta understand, like, 25 years ago, we were piling up in cars going to D.C. to buy a Louis belt or a Versace belt.
Right.
And now to
one
see that.
For the car. Yeah.
No, not one for the car. Yeah. Don't do that to me. But, you know.
But yeah.
And now to see, like, you know, Pharrell being the head over there at Louis Vuitton, it's just, you know, it's just endless, man. Sky's the limit.
It's unfathomable. Yeah. You know what else is unfathomable?
These Doritos?
I cannot believe. First of all, I want to say up front, I have consumed no food today.
Okay.
And the first thing
you
that
and I both.
The either. First thing that we are being forced to eat is this.
And I'm only doing it because it's you.
Only because it's you.
Only doing it because
you
know
Times.
We don't even listen.
You're in the New York Times.
Listen,
all right,
y'all.
So every episode of Popcast, we end with a snack taste test. It's snack time. You guys went to our pantry, which is very full
it's
these days.
Right
we got
now.
A yeah. lot of junk over there. Like a lot of like nuclear looking junk food, like collabs, flavors you've never heard of.
Korean, Japanese,
Push,
all kinds.
You were immediately drawn to what I would like to say is the most beautiful Dorito bag of all time. This
yes.
is the new golden sriracha flavor. This is, I've had these. I have to
oh,
admit,
okay.
I can't stop myself when there's a new spicy chip at the bodega. I get them, I eat them. I know John doesn't eat
One
spice.
One of the running themes of this show is I do not enjoy spice. So
at
this
all.
Is going to be brutal for me. So thank you for that. This is going to be a nightmare for me.
All right. So golden sriracha. Why, what was it? Was it just the bag or was it also the flavor?
No,
are you a sriracha guy?
No. Yes. Sriracha, yes. Doritos, yes.
What's your go-to Dorito?
You know, I'm
Cool Ranch.
Yeah. I was about to say I'm a
Blue
Cool
bag.
Ranch or original. And, you know, if there's a sub anywhere by me, I'm putting it inside of my
right.
sub.
Cool mm-hmm. Ranch in
yeah.
in the sandwich.
1,000
yeah,
right.
Cool Ranch so as well.
Bust these
the
open.
Joke on the show is I find Cool Ranch spicy.
Oh, man.
That's yeah. the joke on the show. So this, clear right. the door.
You guys take as much as you want because, again, I've had these before. So I'm just going to have the one.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
It has like a little honey oh, smell geez. To it. Like there's a little tad of sweet.
I mean, the smell is there.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a lot brighter than I was expecting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a lot brighter.
There's a little lime in this,
yeah,
too.
There's
yeah,
some,
yeah, yeah.
It's not just
lime.
Sriracha. It's like,
yeah.
oh.
there's other notes going on.
There's a little lime.
I would say it's not even spicy. Not
comes
many
at the end.
There's a follow. I yeah. feel it, the follow, but the brightness up front really, really shouts out the spice on the back.
Yeah.
I'm shocked. I thought I was going
to
be
Look, you just need
running to the restroom.
More.
Like, really good.
Yeah, no, you just,
yeah,
need, to,
really
you just need to you just need to be eating more spice because it turns
yeah.
out you like it.
Unbelievable.
That was great.
All right. So we're going to rank it out of 10. You can have more if you want to have more.
I'm cool, but,
yeah.
but I'm a 10 on that. I'm
really?
Cool.
10
yeah.
out of 10.
Yeah.
You would
I like
buy
that. Oh, for sure.
Wood cop.
Would be really good on a sandwich.
Yeah.
For sure.
For
I
sure.
could eat the whole bag.
You could eat the
yeah.
whole bag.
Yeah.
Same. I'm like, yeah. I think like I would like a little more kick. I wish it was a little spicier. Like obviously everything is Flamin' Hot now. Like this is like a 5 if like a Flamin' Hot is like a 7.
Like
and
a spice level.
Spice level.
Yeah.
But what
so,
not as a
so
snack?
So I'm going to say overall, I'll give it like an 8 out of 10. It's a really nice flavor.
Malice, yeah. what about you?
What about me? What?
Rating
rank
out
it
10.
Out of 10.
Oh, no, I give it a 10.
10 out of 10.
I give it a 10. If you can eat it with a sandwich, it's a 10.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, honestly, dog, is that a 9?
Wow. John loves sriracha.
I'm stupefied.
And he don't like heat.
I can't put sriracha on food because it ruins me.
You don't
me.
Eat pho?
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
No.
We're
going to
get
apologies.
Pho next time.
Apologies
be
to those who take me to
snack.
Vietnamese restaurants
okay.
and
yeah.
struggle. I think that is incredibly well balanced.
Yeah.
I'm stupefied.
Yeah.
That did not go how I thought it was going to go.
A well-rounded breakfast.
Yes. That's definitely I'm going to eat one of these in the morning now every day. Thanks, guys. That is our show. Malice, Pusha T.
Thank
Clips.
You. Thank you.
Joe.
Thank you.
Everybody
guys
appreciate
here's a star.
You, man.
Really a pleasure.
Yo,
appreciate
thank
y'all.
You. All right. Yes, sir.
That is our show. Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast. Get us on YouTube for the full interview, youtube.com/podcast. We're on Instagram and TikTok, also at podcast. Credits in bio. We'll be back next week.